So I'm going to head to Brisbane, put in some time up there, and then down to Adelaide, and then back across to Melbourne for the finale.
Covering half the capitals of this country.
Raze is really popular. He's in high demand, so he gets requests coming from everywhere.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the AO Show with me, John Hoovenaars. Yannick Sinner, take a bow. What an extraordinary finish to the season. And now we're just 4 weeks away from the start of next. Here's what's coming up. Australia's Davis Cup hopes dashed in the final against Italy.
We are very, very close, and it's things like hell that we'll be back.
Yannick Sinner gives us more reasons to believe he's ready for major title contention.
Come 2024, what I'm taking out of the data anyway is that there's another one in the mix there, and I think we've just seen it.
And British women's number one Katie Bolter set to turn heads this summer.
I hope you know it's going to go down.
That's all ahead on the AO Show.
We are less than a month away, would you believe, from the Australian Summer of Tennis. It all kicks off with the United Cup in Perth and Sydney from December 29. We're going to be discussing a few bits and pieces around the summer and all the other stuff that's been happening at the end of the 2023 season. Joining me at the roundtable today, Simon Ray from the Game Insight Group. Welcome, Razor.
Hi, John. Good to be back with you.
Great to have you. And beaming in from Sydney is the radiant Casey Delacqua. Welcome, Case.
Hey, Raze. Hey, John. Great to see you both again.
Hey, what a fantastic end it's been to the, I mean, it's still kind of going in the sense that we've got a WTA 125 ongoing at the moment, quarterfinals as we record this, but the men's tour came to an end with the Davis Cup finals last week, and we saw a young man who's really been building in the last few months put an absolute crescendo on his season. He goes by the name of Yannick Sinner, and Razor, he led Italy to a 2-love or 2-0, however you like, win over Australia in the Davis Cup final.
Yeah, he did, John. And unfortunately, from an Australian perspective, it played out the way that it did. But certainly there's been no denying Sinner and his finish to the 2023 campaign. I was just thinking when you were talking about the length of the season, it's not something that's easily solved. The season's still rolling and we're nearly into December, and then 2024 kicks off immediately after Christmas. Not much of a pre-season allowed for, is there?
No, there's certainly not. And I think obviously the men seem to play a little bit later in the season. A lot of the women seeing on socials have been able to have that kind of bit of a break. But I do think it's something to definitely look at in the future in terms of future-proofing the sport. I think athletes, in terms of their scheduling, what they do and don't play, is also very important. But I think that's why we see often, you know, injuries or maybe on the women's side a little bit more, those kind of sabbatical where they go away and kind of come back, because they're long seasons. And when you've done it since the age of, you know, often 15, 16, it's pretty arduous. So I think, we are seeing... which is good for our sport though, right? You get to pretty much watch some tennis every week of the year, so that's not a bad thing. But yeah, it's definitely a long season for a lot of these players.
Well, it was a great way for the Italian team to cap off that long season. And Matteo Arnaldi was a big part of it. He took down Alexei Popyrin in a really tight three-setter. And for large parts of the second and third set, Popyrin was in control, Razor. He ended up losing to Arnaldi 7-5, 2-6, 6-4. Let's quickly hear a little bit from Australian captain Leighton Hewitt.
Yeah, the first match out there today could have gone either way. Alexi did great, had created plenty of opportunities. We're probably a point away quite a few times, to be honest. Yeah, and it's a completely different situation than going into the second match, a 1-0 up.
Really, that was the linchpin to this tie, because it would have got Australia through to a deciding doubles rubber.
Yeah, well, I guess as is often the case in these team competitions, things can be fluid and you can need to make changes and quick changes sometimes. And Australia probably went into the event thinking that Tanasi Kokkinakis was going to play a really pivotal role, and obviously came unstuck with that knee injury in the lead up. And I know Captain Hewitt then turned to Jordan Thompson earlier in the week, and then Alexi was the next cab off the rank, if you like, and responded really well. And
had a win.
And all but got them to that 1-0 lead in the critical final, which would have been huge for Australia, obviously, with the faith that the captain and the entire nation would have had in the team of Ebden and Purcell to get the job done in the doubles, noting the formidable obstacle that Yannick Sinner was going to present to Demon or down the other end. But Alexi all but got it done for Australia in the final.
Well, Captain Hewitt said at the start of the week that it was going to take one hell of a player to defeat Yannick Sinner. And as it turned out, that never happened. I mean, he even got the better of Djokovic throughout, in fact, twice in a day when they played Serbia.
Yeah, and I think from a data perspective, it's interesting to take a look at the numbers across the last 12 months. And we've probably seen the emergence of Alcaraz, and we've seen the proof, if you like, in terms of the emerging rivalry, or not the emerging rivalry, the rivalry that already exists. It's there. It's in front of us right now between Alcaraz and Djokovic. But I think the data tells us that come 2024, what I'm taking out of the data anyway, is that there's another one in the mix there. And I think we've just seen it over the last fortnight. He's really announced himself as having arrived, albeit in favourable conditions. And I think it's Jannik Sinner. And the reason I say that is when you look at some of these key statistical categories. So, for example, second serve points won over the course of 2023. The top three players on tour, Djokovic, Sinner and Alcaraz. How about return on second serve? So from a returning perspective, well, Sinner's actually got the great Djokovic covered. Sinner and Alcaraz are both in front of Djokovic. Numbers 1, 3, and 4 on tour in terms of percentage of second serve return points won. And on we go. Deciding sets won across the tour. You'd think that Novak's exceptional at 72% of deciding sets won. Sinner's got him covered at 77% of deciding sets won. So I think there's weapons on serve and forehand. There's returning capability that's right up there, can certainly match it with the likes of Djokovic and Alcaraz. And then there's the clutch performance, or the under pressure performance, where we see him not just matching it, but in some ways standing out from the pack. So I think all the data indicators are that, look out come 2024. He's one that I've got a little asterisk right next to come the Australian summer, Jannik Sinner.
Rays, I love it. That is actually great insight, because Sinner, in terms of that kind of player for the tennis audience to watch, was going to be really exciting. He has got a great game. He's got a really great demeanour about him. He kind of goes a little bit unnoticed in some ways, but I think he's certainly going to be one on court from a tennis perspective, some explosive tennis that we're going to get to see him down under very soon, and very exciting.
I felt quite good today, not only today, but in the last month. And this is a really important win for me, and I think for the whole team and Italy together.
Yeah, Jannik, he's played awesome all week. The last few weeks, to be honest, last few months. So he showed why he's a top three or four player in the world at the moment, and he backed up what he did, yesterday against Novak, and played extremely good tennis. I think the conditions and the surface suit him perfectly as well, which makes life pretty tough.
It's a form line raiser that really whets the appetite of anyone who might be lucky enough to grab a ticket to see him. He's going to be Rod Laver Arena, I reckon, this guy.
Yeah, well, I think he's box office, this guy. Yeah. And we've known that Alcaraz and Djokovic clearly Djokovic has been box office for the best part of 20 years, and Alcaraz has announced himself as being that over the last year or two. And as I said, over the last couple of minutes, I think this young man, he's right there with them. And if I could make an early end of season 2023 prediction with a view to forecasting forward, I think 2024 is the year that he claims his maiden slam triumph. And the question is that down under here at Melbourne Park, here at Rod Laver Arena come January? I think you can make a really strong case that he's right there. He's emerging. He's coming. He's arriving right now. That time is now.
Case, we actually haven't seen Italy as a nation do particularly well here at the Australian Open, but with such a large fan base and a great Italian population here in Melbourne, it would make sense that he's going to be a very popular proposition come January.
Absolutely. I think we saw it a little bit with the United Cup last year here in Sydney when Italy played, and the crowd that came out to support Berrettini and the Italians was actually pretty phenomenal. And as you said, down in Melbourne, there's that fan base. And my local coffee shop, there's a woman that serves me coffee, and she is Italian, and she is always talking about Sinner. So he's definitely on the radar of not only the Italians, but I think globally, that Jannik Sinner name has definitely been talked about. So I think he's got, with some backing behind him down under, I love Razor's gutsy call, a maiden slam, and who knows if it will come down under, but I certainly think he's at that age where every tennis player goes through their purple patch and there kind of hits their peak, and he's right there.
It was funny because even though he was always in the conversation with commentators, he would always be mentioned sort of the 6th to 10th name. He was never right at the top of the tree. He was almost seen as a next-gen player. But in the space of six, to 12 months, he's come leaps and bounds right up into the conversation.
Undoubtedly. And you know, the immeasurable part, so Kay spoke about the data and what it tells us, and the part that we don't know what he might take from it is, what does that do for him in terms of wrapping up 2023 and putting a bow around it? Well, you can't finish much more strongly than a win over Novak Djokovic in the semifinal, pulling your team out of the jaws of defeat to a spine-tingling victory and then claiming the title 24 hours later. It's a phenomenal way to end season 2023. We know he's got incredible guidance in his corner from Darren Cahill, and no doubt after a little bit of well-deserved R&R now, it's a quick preseason for the Sinner camp and then down under to start season 2024.
And we can't fail to mention that in that Djokovic victory, he actually saved 3 match points from 40 love down.
On his own serve, yep.
From love 40 down to crawl his way back into the match and then turn the tables on the defending Australian Open champion. Quite a phenomenal result. So Australia once again falls at the last hurdle for the second year in a row. Here's Alex de Minaur's thoughts.
I also think there's hasn't been another nation that's gone back-to-back in the last 2 years. So we're showing a pretty good effort. Collectively, we are very, very close. And it's things like hell, but again, like I said last year, in the same position, we'll be back and we'll get this. I mean, we've got a very, very strong future ahead of us.
So from Australian heartbreak to Australian ecstasy for Ila Tomjanovic, who case has had a torturous 12 months, really, but it ends in the best way possible over in Florianopolis, Brazil.
Yeah, I'm so, so happy for Ila, as I'm sure many people are, because she is a great athlete, but also just a great human being in terms of the way she goes about things. And, you know, she's battled with injuries over the years, whether it be shoulder or knee or in different for different reasons. So just thrilled for Ila that she's finishing the year on a high. You could see at US Open she was really starting to pull some good tennis together, had a good win there, but then had to pull back a bit, and just is so smart with how she knows how to manage her body. And I think it, you know, is paying dividends with a title to finish her year. Yes, it was a 125 and, you know, perhaps probably didn't play the highest rank, but a win's a win, Rays and John. Doesn't matter where they come from. As long as you got a win under your belt, especially going into next year, I'm just really happy for her. And we know the type of player she is. We know she's got the ability to, you know, reach second weeks of slams and really push those top players. But yeah, thrilled for Ila, and obviously it's going to help her ranking. Her ranking's going to jump up quite a bit now as well.
Absolutely. And we spoke about momentum in terms of finishing the year from a Jannik Sinner perspective. And similarly, albeit in very different circumstances, for Ila to overcome the disappointment of Alicia Molik, Captain Molik's final BJK Cup campaign. And obviously it was the type of campaign that was, unfortunately, from an Australian perspective, over before it really began. Yeah. After that disappointment that they met on the opening day against
Slovenia.
And to bounce back from that and to go track all the way down to South America and to claim the title, I think working with a new coach now, Robert Lindstedt's in the camp and helping Ila and the family out. So I think it's a really exciting launch pad into season 2024 for the team.
Well, let's stay with the Aussies for a moment, because in a couple of weeks we've got the Australian Tennis Awards, and the big gong is the Newcomb Medal awarded to the best player. Case, you'll be, I think you have an important role in the proceedings, but there are 6 very worthy nominees nominated for the Newcomb Medal this year.
Yeah, look, just firstly on the Australian Tennis Awards, it's, you know, a highlight of mine because, yes, the Newcomb Medal is the pinnacle award, of course, but I also think just recognising all of those people that do amazing things in our sport. Obviously, every state has their own awards, and then they kind of congregate in Melbourne for these awards, which is just, it's so nice when I know I work in the sport daily for the volunteers, for the coaches, and for all of those people to be recognised as well. In terms of Nukes, it's, you know, we've got some great nominees. Obviously, there's some standouts. Alex de Minaur, of course, played great tennis all season. Love his never say die attitude. Won a title in Acapulco. I think he's finished the year number 12, which is, you know, really pushing top 10. And he certainly is a standout. But I think I just want to acknowledge Matt Ebden, Storm Hunter as well. Both had phenomenal years on the doubles circuit. Storm finishing world number one in the world in doubles is huge. So obviously some other nominees, which maybe Ray's you can mention as well. But Yeah, for me, some really worthy nominees, and it'll be, you know, a tight contest, but some certain standouts as well.
So a fourth nomination for Demonor, who won the award alongside Ash Barty back in 2018. Third nomination for Matt Ebden on the back of last year, also Storm Hunter's second nomination. Max Purcell is also nominated for a second consecutive year, and a first-time nomination for Alexi Poprin and Rinki Hijikata, two of the shining lights of Australia's next generation race.
Yeah, and I think it's a phenomenal field and a deserving celebration of what's been an outstanding year for Australian tennis. The likes of Rinki forging into the top 100 under the expert guidance of Mark Draper, Max Purcell, and what really was an astronomical rise into not inside just to the top 100, but inside the top 50 from a singles perspective when...
And doubles.
It wasn't very long ago when he was focused purely on the doubles, as you described, John. So, and then Alexi and the firepower and the weapons and that memorable Australian Open campaign we saw from him nearly 12 months ago. So an outstanding field of nominees, and it'll be a fabulous night and well hosted. We're in great hands in terms of Casey and Todd.
Oh, Casey and Todd, the old guard back together. You'll have to put in a word to get him back on the podcast.
Yeah, I know. He's moved on to the game shows, hasn't he, John? He's left us hanging, but I am excited to work with Todd again. And as Race it, just celebrate our wonderful sport. It's been a part of my life since I was 5 years old. So I just love these nights and they're just super exciting.
So that's coming up on December 11. Further afield, 31 December is the start of the Brisbane International. Some big news to come in the coming weeks, but we can announce today the three latest additions, Arina Sabalenka, Elena Rybakina and Ben Shelton, all joining what is fast becoming a star-studded field up in Brizzy, Case.
Certainly is. And I think, you know, Aussies are going to be very, very lucky to see tennis across multiple states. There's phenomenal players scattered around the whole nation during January. But Brisbane, I think all the people up in Brisbane that I've spoken to are really excited to have the Brisbane International back. Obviously with Rybakina and Sabalenka, wow, two big hitters there that are going to go, I think, toe-to-toe for many years to come. So, and that lefty, Ben Shelton, well, he's one of my favourites. I love watching him. And great to see Osaka back. Yeah, the mums have been talking about them for a while now because there's so many coming back down under. And it's going to be really interesting to see, you know, how Naomi Osaka presents out on court in terms of her mentality and how this break and obviously giving birth has been for her. Some really exciting players, and it's going to be a great week up at the Brisbane International.
Yeah, there's not much more I can add. Just an incredibly exciting way to kick off season 2024. And as Casey mentioned, you know, the long-awaited return of the Brisbane International for the locals up there. And wow, what a way to return for the event with some of the leading lights of world tennis heading to Pat Rafter Arena and heading back to Brisbane again.
Yeah, including Victoria Azarenka, Andy Murray, Holger Rune and Grigor Dimitrov. They're all going to be up in Bris Vegas for the Brisbane International. Have I asked you guys, where are you heading for the start of the summer? What's your first event?
I'm going to be hanging here in Sydney. So I'm going to be helping with the commentary team and that during the United Cup here in Sydney. And then we'll head into the finals here in Sydney when the winning teams come over from Perth. So really excited for the United Cup once again.
I think I'm going to clock up just a few miles on the plane. So I'm going to head to Brisbane and put in some time up there and then down to Adelaide and then back across to Melbourne for the finale.
Covering half the capitals of this country.
Rays is really popular. He's in high demand, so he gets requests coming from everywhere.
I'm sure that includes you as well, Case. But you've got some, I guess you've both got actually child-minding duties. It's just Case might have a few more, have her hands full a little bit more than you, Rays.
I reckon that's up for debate, John.
We're both equal at three.
Well, three's a crowd by any measure. And if that's the case, they're going to have two crowds at the Adelaide International because six players have been unveiled today to join the field under, Alicia Molik's Adelaide International. She's been announced as the new tournament director, and under her auspices joining the field will be Elena Rybakina, Zheng Qinwen, Caroline Garcia, Alexi Poprin, Sebi Korda and Jack Draper, all announced today as joining the field of the Adelaide International, which will be a WTA 500 and ATP 250 event. So plenty for the City of Churches to look forward to. Those players today joining a field that already has Thanasi Kokkinakis, Ila Tomjanovic, and Angie Kerber, among others. So heaps to look forward to as the summer of tennis kicks off in less than a month time. Looking forward to catching you guys maybe once or twice more before the end of the season.
Fabulous.
Thanks, John. Thanks, Case. Good to be with you.
See you both.
OzOpen.com's Matt Trelope has been busy chatting to many players ahead of the Aussie summer. Matt, who have you been catching up with?
Yeah, I caught up with Katie Boulter on the weekend to chat with her about playing for Team GB at the United Cup in Perth. So it was really good to chat to her. One thing that really struck me was her relationships with the players on Team GB. So there's six in the squad that will be playing in 2024. And, you know, she's played Hotman Cup with Cam Norrie before. She's been on the Billie Jean King Cup team with Maya Lumsden. She played a British exhibition event during COVID, like in a COVID bubble with Dan Evans. They were all on the team together. So there's this real camaraderie between the team. She has an enormous respect for all of them. I loved hearing her talk about her teammates. So, yeah, and she just loves representing Great Britain. Her record's incredible playing representative tennis for GB. So, yeah, it was a really good chat.
Well, take us into the interview.
Well, the Aussie Summer of Tennis is really packed. I think there's three events in the first week, United Cup, Brisbane International, there's also Auckland. So I was interested to know why it was the United Cup that she wanted to play over other events. And yeah, we went from there.
Obviously, you know, all the tournaments are, they're going to be really, really good. I think the biggest swaying point for me was firstly to play for your country. Any opportunity that I get, I think it brings an extra level of passion and focus that I think a lot of events sometimes lack. So to be playing for your country, that's probably the most important. But I think secondly, it's great to have the opportunity to play multiple matches. You know, obviously you don't want to go to your first event and play one match, but sometimes it happens, and it happens to the majority of us that play these events. And I think for me, to get guaranteed matches and then have the opportunity to play more is the most important thing. And to be prepared for Australian Open, I think the more matches you can get, the better.
With Cam in Hotman Cup being one of the best weeks that you said, what was it that made it so great?
I really don't know. I think, you know, during the build-up for pre-season and the whole time during pre-season, we had this just a great vibe going on between the whole Team GB, and, you know, we were playing some games and practicing together and doing bits and bobs, which really kind of ignited all of us during pre-season before the event even started. And then we played Hotman Cup, and I managed to obviously play against Federer, which was probably a dream come true. Not many people can say they've played against him, as a female especially. And I also played against Serena, and that was the first time I'd ever come across her. Two legends of the game really meant a lot to me in that time, because I'd never really experienced anything like that. And yeah, it was just a lot of fun. We played mixed doubles. It was something that we haven't done that much of on tour. So it was a completely new, fresh, exciting thing that I'd never done. And it definitely goes down to one of the best weeks of my career for sure.
I'd forgotten about that being the Federer and Serena year as well. Yeah, that was an incredible Hotman Cup.
It was crazy.
Yeah, fantastic. Also, another connection you have with Cam, I thought it was really cool. I think Jack Draper did it too. You guys did that magazine shoot with Tapler, I think ahead of Wimbledon. I really find those moments are cool when tennis kind of crosses over a bit into the mainstream or pop culture, because that doesn't always happen. What was that experience like, and how did that all come to be?
Yeah, it was a very unique experience. It's not something I've done that much of before, but it was, again, a completely different dream that I ticked off. To be on the cover of a magazine, I think every little girl kind of wants to be that person. And I was lucky enough to be it. And, you know, I had two great guys with me. I'd known them since I was super young, and obviously to share that moment with them was pretty cool. And yeah, I think it was a nice testament to all the hard work that we've put in over the years in a completely different way.
For sure. We heard an interview with Cam a couple of weeks ago. I think he was in Vienna or Paris, and he was talking about playing with you at the United Cup and said that your top level's great and that you can hit the ball as well as any of the top women. Do you feel the same way about your game? Do you believe that?
Yeah, I definitely do. It's nice to hear that my teammate thinks that too, because I didn't hear that one. But no, he's, yeah, I mean, I totally believe in it. I do. And I think as this year has shown, my level is there, and I only think I'm going to get better. You know, I'm working hard. I'm working on my weaknesses and my strengths at the same time. And I think I'm in the best place I could possibly be, and I'm really excited for next year. I've always got things to improve, but looking forward to getting out and competing and really showing what I can do, and hopefully United Cup can start that.
The team, as well as Cam, it's really deep. So obviously Dan Evans, Neil Skupski's had a great year, and Fran Jones is a really cool story. What else do you know about the rest of the team, kind of your teammates? Do you know them all as well as you might know Cam? And what can Team GB do at the United Cup with all of that strength?
Yeah, we actually had a little event during COVID a few years ago where we had an in-house British team event where we basically split in the middle and we played against each other. So I was on the same team as Evo, and I got to know him quite well at that point, which was pretty cool. He is someone you definitely want in your corner. I know he's going to be screaming and shouting and doing everything that he can to help me win. And that feels great to know that your teammates are like that. Maya, I actually spent the last Billie Jean King Cup with her this last couple of weeks ago. So that was great getting to know her. She's a great teammate as well. So nice to see. Fran is a very, very special lady. She is incredible. What she has done in the sport is, I mean, it's astronomical. I can't even relate to it. I think she's a true fighter, and I have a lot of respect for what she does. And Neil, I've known him since I was quite young as well. He seems like a lovely guy, very good doubles player. And I haven't spent as much time with him, but I'm looking forward to getting the whole team together. So I think that's what's exciting. We're all going to be coming from completely different backgrounds and coming together as Team GB.
Awesome. And just one last one on Team GB. Your record playing for your country is great, but particularly some of the things you've done in Billie Jean King Cup. It's playing for your country, it's a different kind of pressure, and some players really thrive in it and others find it quite overwhelming because, you know, there's that extra weight. What do you think it is about those kinds of team competitions representing Britain that seems to go really well for you?
I feel like I'm a player who thrives in that situation. I really kind of got thrown into the deep end when I first played on my debut, and ever since then I managed to stand up and continue that run, and I've played some seriously good matches for them, and I think it just brings a little bit more sparkle out of you. I think it just seeing your teammates on the sideline playing for them, not just playing for you, it really kind of draws something out of me that I don't have most of the year. So they really help me, and it's one of the weeks that I really look forward to, and we don't have many team events, so I really thrive under those situations.
Now, obviously playing potentially against Alex, you're in the opposite team to Alex, but also you may play him in mixed doubles depending on how, you know, teams are selected. We also heard an interview with him in Paris, and he said the same thing: lots of banter. You guys are, you know, enemies against each other the next couple of weeks. And, he said something along the lines of, you're going to have to get used to the fact that Australia is going to beat Britain. I think he said something like that. So when you hear that.
Oh, I heard it.
Yep.
Actually, he texted me pretty much straight after that interview. And he was like, I hope you know it's going to go down. And I was like, I don't know what you're talking about. And then I heard it because I got tagged in it somewhere. And I was like, oh, it's going to be like that then. Okay, it's great to know, because I'm very well prepared for these situations. I'm looking forward to it, because there's only one team that's going to win, and that's Great Britain. So there's no other way to put it.
I think it's great. And the dynamic is obviously Group C itself. That was one of the things that came up at the draw. It was so strong because you've got defending champions USA in there as well. And they're three Grand Slam nations. They've got that incredible history. I think that's a group that a lot of people are really looking forward to at this edition of the United Cup. So, yeah, like, what did you think when you saw GB fall into that group?
Yeah, I mean, I think having had experience in Hotman Cup, where we played probably the strongest teams we possibly could have, I'm looking forward to it. I really am. You know, ultimately for me, I have no pressure. I feel like we're a strong nation. We've got a lot of strength behind us. But, you know, I've got to take care of my matches, and my matches are all that I'm going to be playing higher ranked opponents, and I'm looking forward to it. You know, I've got nothing to lose. I'm going to go out, have a swing, and hopefully show what I can do. But yeah, it's obviously going to be a tough group to get out of. I think it's an uphill battle for everyone, and it's going to be who plays better on the day. And I think that's the beauty of tennis. It's about matchups, and anything can happen. And hopefully that's going to be us going through.
That's all for this week's episode of The AO Show. Join us again next week for the latest tennis news, views and interviews. Happy birthday this week to Monica Seles, Dylan Alcott and Coco Vandeweghe. If you'd like to get in touch, you can contact us via ozopen.com/listen or email theaoshow@tennis.com.au. Take a moment now to subscribe so you never miss an episode, and please consider leaving a rating or review so more fans can discover The AO Show.